What is it?
To give you an overall view.
That is so right. That's right. Compared to as opposed to what? Okay, it's compared to a detailed study, right? So the overview is not going to be a lot of detail. So if you ask a detailing question, we'll say, well, we're going to look at that later because we're not going to look at a lot of detail. We're going to look at the overview. It's like if you're buying, I've used this illustration before, and it's not mine. If you're going to buy a big piece of property and you're going to look at the property, it's going to be, oh, oops, what's wrong? Are we right? It's not right. If you were, you'd fly over the land, you'd maybe get a little airplane, you'd fly over and you'd see the barns and the creek and all the different ways the hills are and whatnot, and you'd see it from above, so you get a general layout of the land. But then later on, as you own that land, you'd walk through it every day and you'd get real familiar with the details of it, and you'd feel real comfortable with all the, I got to be careful here, I might slide on that little slippery slope there, whatever, you kind of understand where the pitfalls are and all that. So that's kind of what the overview is. And we're going to do just the first 4 or 5 chapters here. And I do have a visitor today. My daughter Susanna is here, and she brought her boyfriend, John. So welcome them. I know he's one of these things is not like the other. One of these I'm really glad. Yeah, Susanna. Yeah, right. That's true. She's our ninth child. So, all right. Okay, so let's take a look at this. Now, the overview, there are certain things that we to look at first. What kind of literature is Revelation? Okay, it's a prophecy or it's apocalyptic, right? I had a horrible time saying that word last night. It's like, this is the wrong time of day to have to say this word so many times. Try to say it 5 times fast. Okay, it's an apocalypse, right? It's the only one in the New Testament. Now, Jewish apocalyptic literature was given for what purpose? Why were they given this literature? Think of Daniel, the second part of Daniel that we studied last year. Why are they given this kind of literature?
Reveal what's coming up.
Okay, it's definitely to reveal what's coming, but why are they given it at the time of history? They are given this. Why is it? Okay, it's an encouragement. So what kind of times are they in when these things come to them from the Lord? Okay, persecution or trial. We think of Daniel. Where were they in Daniel? What was going on there? Yeah, they were exiled. They were taken out of their land. Their government was gone. They were now under the authority of the Babylonians. Times looked dark for God's promises, didn't they? And so God gives them that vision, that look ahead to see that, yes, indeed, God's promises are true and what he says will come to pass. And so in Revelation, what's going on during the time of John? It's about, what, between 81 and 96 A.D., if you think the Revelation was written. What was going on? Okay, there's persecution. How do we know that? What hint do we get in the first chapter? Okay, John is imprisoned. He's exiled to the island of Patmos. He says he's a fellow partaker in what? Okay, tribulation and kingdom and perseverance. So you have to persevere in your trial, don't you? Remember K. Arthur always saying you have to hupomeno, right, remain under the trial. Well, they were persevering in the trial. And so at this time when things were really dark and the church was being persecuted, God gave John this vision of what was to come. And it's to be an encouragement. So can we look at this and say that this book of Revelation is to be the same thing to us? Because I know our times, we aren't facing the persecution that they were at that time, but times in our country have gotten darker, haven't they? And we know that we have to persevere as his children. So he's given us the same way. He's given us this book so that we can be encouraged to live the lives that he wants us to live and to have hope. All right. So they're written to be encouraging. They had certain features were common in apocalyptic writing. I've gotten it out several times now. Good for me. Okay, there's visions. And how does John receive this book? Okay, it's a vision. It's something that he sees and he hears. And there's symbols. Now, what's the purpose of the symbols? We know that Revelation is full of symbolic, and same with Daniel. We see a lot of symbolic forms there. Ezekiel. What's the purpose of the symbols?
Stand for something else.
Okay, they stand for... Is it meant to obscure the real meaning so that we can't see?
No, amplify it.
Okay, it's to give us a kind of imaginative insight into things, right? It's not meant to make it more difficult to understand, but it is meant to give us kind of to trigger our imagination so that we have more insight because of that. And they also contain a lot of Old Testament echoes. And so as we go back and look at these different symbols and things and different things that are alluded to in the book of Revelation, it will always go back to the Old Testament. Go back to the Old Testament, which is very encouraging to us. We spent a lot of time in the past 12 years studying the Old Testament, so it should be very clear to us. And a lot of numbers as well. There's many numbers that have special meaning, and you'll see this popping up throughout the book of Revelation. All right, so who's the author of the book? Okay, John. What do we know about John from chapter 1? How does he describe himself? Okay, he's a bondservant, right? Okay. What else does he say?
Partaker in tribulation.
Okay, he's a partaker in tribulation, a fellow partaker, so they are suffering. Okay. And then how does John get this message? There's a chain of communication that comes to John. How does it start off? Okay. Comes from God to God the Father gives it to Jesus. He gives it to who? Okay, the angel is next. He's next in the line. The angel gives it to and from John it goes to
churches.
Okay. Seven churches. Where are the churches?
Asia.
In Asia. It's like playing that game telephone. One person whispers it to one person, it goes on and on until it gets right to the end. Okay, so it originates with God the Father, and he gives it to his son, who passes it on to the angel, who tells John so he can write the letters to the churches in Asia. What's the purpose? Okay, and what does it say in the very first verse? It tells you what the purpose of the writing and the vision was. Okay, is to show to his bondservants the things which must soon take place. And it's communicated then because of this. So what does God want us to know? All right, so God gave the book of Revelation so that his bondservants would know the things that would soon take place. So does that mean God wants us to understand as well? Yeah, so I really believe with all my heart that we can understand the book of Revelation because God is a good communicator. And he gave it for the purpose of us understanding. All right, and then what do we see in the book, in the first chapter of Revelation? What does God promise? Okay, there is a blessing. There's a blessing that's very specific to the book of Revelation. He says, blessed is he who does what? Okay. Okay, so there's one who's going to be in one of these churches. He's going to stand up, and he's going to read the entire book of Revelation to the church. And then there's going to be those who are listening. So the one who reads it is blessed, the ones who hear it are blessed, and the ones who do what?
Heed.
What does that mean, to heed?
Obey.
Okay, obey it, to keep it. There is a blessing for those. And he says, blessed is he who reads, who hears the words of the prophecy and heeds the things which are written in it, because what?
The time is near.
The time is near. So what are we to understand as we go about our lives day to day, day to day? What are we to really think about every single day? Yeah. Yeah, to be ready, because the time is near. And we're to keep these words, and we're to keep them in our heart, and we're to live by them. And of course, as we go through this, we see that a lot of it is just showing him what's going to happen. So how do you obey something that's going to happen? What does that mean to heed the words?
To be ready at all times.
To share with people who don't know.
Okay. It's to live in light of it, isn't it? If you think about, I think it was Paul that talked about when he was getting ready to leave, he said that there is waiting for him the crown of, wasn't it, crown of righteousness that was for all those who did what?
Look for his appearance.
Who loved his appearance. If you're looking for him to come back, if every day you get up and you think, today could be the day, and then you live in the light of that, how does that affect your life?
You're attentive.
You're right. It's right. It's a crown of righteousness, because if we think every single day, we wake up and we ask the Lord to help us to live our life knowing that today he might come back, what is that? It's going to purify our life, isn't it? Our life is going to be pure. If we think really, honestly, truly, I could see the Lord today. How would that change how we respond to our neighbor, the person that's driving the car in front of us, the things that we set as our goals? It affects everything. All right, so this is the purpose the book was given to us. And so we are going to read it, and we are going to understand what he wants for us. Okay, so as you did the book, the first chapter of Revelation, what title did you come up with for chapter one? What would it be? What kind of sums up the whole of chapter one?
John,
Revelation was given to John, right? Okay. To John, and what else? What did John see?
By the glorified Christ.
Okay, had the vision of Christ. We're going to look at that, of course, more as we go on. And anything kind of like that. It's the purpose of the book chart, of course, is for you to remember. It's like an outline for you to remember what is in the chapter. So it doesn't have to be exactly this. Just kind of look for the... We used to always try to come up with these real kind of cute, pithy titles, but it's not necessary. And which is good, because some of us have trouble with that kind of thing. All right. Now, if we thought about, we were supposed to compare Revelation chapter 22. How did you find, as you read Revelation 22, were there things in Revelation 22 that would fit in with chapter 20 or chapter 1? What'd you find? Okay, what was that?
Chapter 6 had bond servants in it and an angel.
Okay, we talked about the bond servants. What else? The blessing. Where was that?
Verse 7.
Okay, verse 7. What does it say? Somebody read it.
And behold, I am coming quickly. Blessed is he who heeds the words of the prophecy of this book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's the same kind of blessing. He talks again about the fact that it's going to happen when? Quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we see as he goes, we'll have the whole prophecy in between. We come back to the end that you're blessed if you read and heed this book. But there's also something else stuck in chapter 22. What is there? There's a blessing, but there's also what?
A curse.
Okay, a curse or a warning. What is the warning? Okay. We weren't to add or subtract anything from the book of this prophecy. Or what? What's the or else? So you're going to be subject to the plagues that are written in this book if you take away or you add to this book. All right, and then we see in chapter 1 that John was what on the Lord's Day? Okay, he was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day and he heard these things. Then we see, of course, the vision of Christ. And where is he? That's not mine. Where does he see him? He's walking among what? Okay, the lampstands. The lampstands are a picture of the churches. Why are they called the lampstands? Okay. They're the stand that holds the light. Who had the lampstand before?
Israel.
Okay, Israel had the lampstand. The lampstand was taken away from them, wasn't it? It's given to the church now. But what is the church going to be warned throughout the book, the letters to the churches? What are they warned?
He would come and take away their lampstand if they weren't.
Okay. There's a possibility the lampstand could be removed. And so we'll see what that means later on. All right, but Jesus is among the lampstands. And so as we get to chapter 2, what is chapter 2? Okay, the letters. The first, how many?
Four.
And what are they? Ephesus. Smyrna. Pergamum. Okay. These are the first four churches he's going to write to. And we see as we go through that there's definitely a pattern, isn't there? If you look at each individual letter, there's a pattern that he writes, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. How does he start it off, each one?
I know.
Okay, I know. How does he know?
He's among them.
Okay. He is walking among the churches. Now, we think about that today. Does Christ still walk among the churches?
Yes.
Does he know what's going on? Does he know our motives, what our goals are, what our hearts are, if we're pure toward him? Yes, he does know. He says, I know. Okay. But one, even before he gets to the I know, how does it start? Okay, there's a description of him at the beginning of every letter, isn't there? And what does that description correlate to going both directions? Goes back to chapter 1, doesn't it? We have the description of Christ that he sees among the churches, but then every short piece that he pulls out of that for the description for each letter correlates to what in that letter?
The message.
Okay, the message to the church, and we'll see that as we go through, that the description that he gives of himself at the beginning of each one of those letters correlates to the content and the message that he has to give to that church. Okay. All right, so chapter 2 then is the messages to the first four, and then chapter 3 is the messages to who? Who were the last three?
Sardis, Philadelphia,
and Laodicea. Okay. Now, what is a common phrase that pops up through these two chapters of letters to the churches? What do we hear over and over again?
Okay. Remember.
Okay, well, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. But the what? What the Spirit says to the churches. So these messages come from the Spirit, and our job is to do what?
Remember.
To listen, right? To listen to what the Spirit says to the churches, if you have an ear to hear. Who said that in the New Testament frequently?
Jesus.
Okay, Jesus himself said that. But he who has an ear to hear, let him hear. And we saw that in the Old Testament as well. Because what do we see in the Old Testament with Israel? What was the God's complaint toward them over and over again? Okay, they had those physical ears, didn't they? But what did they not do with them? Okay, they didn't listen to him, did they? They didn't have ears to hear, they didn't have eyes to see, and they didn't have a heart to understand. So now he's saying that here's the message. If you have ears to hear, you listen to what the Holy Spirit says to the churches. Okay. Now, if we go back to chapter 1, verse 19, after John sees the vision of Christ in the churches, he is told, therefore, write the things which what?
You have seen.
You have seen. Okay, now what things did John see? These are your segment divisions on your chart. Okay, the things that he saw the vision of Christ. What's the next thing he's supposed to write?
Things
So we see that the way the church is, the condition of the church, the Jesus walking among the churches, these are the things that are. Okay. We have two of our segment divisions. Then what is the last category that he's supposed to write? Okay, the things which will take place after these things. So we have past, present, future type things, three different time periods he's supposed to look at. And after we get through chapter 2 and 3, which are in the letters to the churches, we open up to chapter 4. And what do we see right at the top of chapter 4? So after these things. So these are the different categories. They break up then. Chapter 1 is the things he saw. Chapters 2 and 3 are the things that are. And then chapter 4 through 22 are the things that are after these things. So if we look at this as a time frame, the things that are, what are the things that are today? What period are we in today?
Churches.
Okay, the period of the churches, right? Okay, so that means that 4 through 22 are things that have not happened yet. These are things that come after the period of the churches. So these are things that will be future, all the things from Revelation 4 on. Okay, after these things, he looked, and what did he see? And where was the door standing open? Okay. Now, if we think about the first three chapters, where do these take place? Okay, these things take place on earth. So another little division we could give here would be on earth. E-A-R-T-H. And then we know that chapter 4 and 5 will be in heaven. Time, the place changes. Okay, so he opens up, the doors open in heaven, and what does he hear? Okay, it's the voice that's like the trumpet. And we're going to see this over and over again. I think if you look, you'd notice this in the first chapter, and then looking ahead, that there are things that are like, or that they seem to be, or they are kind of like, or they appear. So is he saying that they are these things? They're similes, right? They're metaphors. They're like something. And we saw that, remember in Ezekiel, and we saw that chariot. He says, kind of like this. It's like that, but it wasn't exactly, but he's trying to describe it. And that's exactly what we see in the book of Revelation. So the voice he heard was like a trumpet, like the sound of a trumpet. And what does he tell him?
Come up here.
Okay, come on up, and I'm going to show you what must take place after these things. So it's two times they say this, so we know this is something that's going to happen after the churches, the time of the churches, moving forward. Okay, immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, what does he see? Okay, he sees a throne standing in heaven, and more importantly, what else does he see? Okay, so chapter 4 is the vision of the throne in heaven. What does John see?
More creatures.
First of all, he sees the glorious appearance of the one on the throne, doesn't he? He's trying to describe, it's like this and like that. And then he sees who?
24.
Okay, there's 24 thrones around that throne, and there are 24 elders sitting there. And how are the elders clothed?
White
garments and gold crowns on their heads. And then from there, what does he see? Got the throne, the 24.
Seven lamps.
All right, get that idea of the majesty and the glory of God, the lightning and the thunder flashing. And what does that kind of make you think of when you hear the thunder and the lightning? Mount Sinai, okay. What might be the discussion, the topic of discussion?
Oh, judgment.
Okay, judgment, right? This isn't a peaceful scene that we're seeing. We're seeing the lightning flash and hearing the thunder roar. Okay, possibly judgment. And then before the throne, then there's what? Okay, the seven lamps of fire, which are what? Okay, the seven spirits of God. And then before the throne, there was something else. What was it? Okay, a sea of glass. We'll look at that later on, too, what the purpose of the glass. And then around the throne in the center are what? Yeah, the four living creatures full of eyes in front and behind. And it talks about what they look like. And what do those four living creatures do? Do they ever stop?
No.
They never, ever stop. They never stop. And when the living creatures give their glory and honor to God, what do the elders do? They fall down and they worship. So what picture do we have? What's going on around the throne in heaven? Okay, there is worship. So John has the vision, he's there to see that, and he gets a glimpse of the glory of God and all the worship that's going on around that throne with the lightning and the thunder flashing. And then he sees something else in chapter 5. What does he see? What's that? Okay, there's one on the throne, and what does he have? What is he holding? Okay, so the one sitting on the throne in his right hand, he's holding a book. That's written where?
Both sides.
There's a lot on in this book, isn't there? I think originally it's a scroll. It's the idea of it's a scroll, but it's a book that's written up, and it's what?
Sealed
up. With how many seals?
Seven.
Seven seals. We talked about numbers being significant. There's another seven here. Okay. So he sees this book that's sealed up, and if it's sealed up, what does that mean? Can you open up and read it?
No.
No, it cannot be accessed. It's a lot on there, but nobody can get to it. And so he's looking, and what does he notice? Okay, there's no one who is able to open the book or break the seals or to look into it. And so what is John's response? Is he's in the spirit looking at all this, and he knows the importance. This is a very important document. No one can open it. How does John respond? Okay, he's weeping. He is weeping. Because no one is found worthy to open the book or look into it. So then what does he hear? Okay. Stop crying. Stop weeping. Because look, just take a look. What do you see? Look up. And what does he see when he looks up? Okay, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, the Lamb who looks as if he has been slain. And what does he do? He is worthy, isn't he? He comes up and takes the book out of the right hand of the one on the throne. And when he took it, what happened?
They fell down to worship.
They all fell down to worship. 24 elders fell down. And they're going to sing a song, aren't they? They're going to sing a new song. Worthy are you to take the book and to break its seals, for you were slain and purchased for God with your blood men from every tribe and tongue and nation and people. You have made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they will reign upon the earth. And then he looked, and what does he see? Okay, myriads and myriads of angels, thousands upon thousands upon thousands. And what do they say? Notice they do not sing. The elders sing, the angels say. What do the angels say? Worthy is the Lamb. Then he hears everything in heaven and earth, or he hears saying to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb, be blessing and honor and glory and dominion forever and ever. And the four living creatures do what? Amen. And they fall down and they worship. So what is the main theme of Revelation chapter 5. Worthy is the Lamb. Because what? Yeah, because he is worthy to open the scroll. And we're going to see that the opening of the scroll, what does it open up?
Seals.
Okay, the seals will be open, and that, what is that? Unleash.
Judgment.
Okay, the judgment. So the whole rest of the book of Revelation will be what happens when he opens up the book. And we'll see the judgment that's to come. On who? Okay, on those who do not have ears to hear, right? Who do not heed. Any questions about any of this so far? Or comments?
Ask a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Also, are the symbols also used so they would be relevant for any time? Or is it, I don't know, I often wondered why too, because like a beast is always a beast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you see that or not?
I don't know, it's something we can think about as we go on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the scroll that he's to unseal, is that the same as going back to Daniel when he said, seal this up?
I don't think so. Okay, let's think about that, because at the end of Revelation, what does he tell John at the end of Revelation? I think it's in chapter 22. Let's see, where is that? Where is that?
What chapter?
10.
What verse is it?
10. Verse 10? Okay, verse 10. What does it say? Okay, do not seal up the words of this prophecy, of this book, for the time is near. If we go to Daniel chapter 12, verse 9, let's see what that says. Daniel receives all those visions from the Lord. At the end of it, in verse 9 of the last chapter, he says, go on your way, Daniel, for these words are concealed and sealed up until when? Until the end time. And so when is the end time? Okay, after Christ comes. We're living in the last days, aren't we? The last days started when Christ died, buried, resurrected, the Holy Spirit came, and we began the last days. And so we are living in the last days. And so he says to seal these up for the purpose, why? Okay, these things are to be kind of concealed. No one's really going to understand them. Not that they can't read them, but they can still read the book of Daniel. But they really wouldn't understand what it was all going to mean, did they? But as the time got closer to the end time, the understanding would come. And as we read through and studied Daniel, we saw that we understood a lot of what he was prophesying, because we're in the time of the last time. So for the book of Revelation, then he says, don't seal them. Why? Yeah, we're in that time, and we are going to see these things happen. Of course, it's been 2,000 years since then, so we know that the end times have gone for a long time, but there has been understanding, and as we have gone on, I would imagine over the course of these 2,000 years, these things have become clearer, and the understanding of them has become sharper, and we can understand more how these things could be looking at the times that we're living in as we move on. So, what was the question about that? What did you ask?
Those were the same. Daniel's scroll was the same as...
Oh, right. No, I don't think necessarily. That was Daniel's book, yeah.
That's probably what they did with things they wrote, though, isn't it? I mean, they would probably...
So what he was to seal up was Daniel's book. And now it's unsealed.
Well, Daniel's book, the book of Daniel, was the book of Daniel. This is a different prophecy.
Yeah.
And we'll look at this more carefully, what the seal and what the book, what the scroll is, as we get on.
Are you saying sealed, when you use the word sealed, do you mean physically, like you may not open it, or do you mean sealed from understanding?
I think that they were able to read the book of Daniel. So I don't think it's sealed up so much. It's more like, what does it say, concealed? What does he say? Let's see, verse. Okay, these words are concealed and sealed up. So I think it's more the idea of you're not really going to understand them until the time gets closer.
Closed up.
Yeah. Versus the seals in Revelation, which are like the book is actually physically sealed.
Sealed. Yes. There are seals to break.
Yes.
I don't think there was a time when they actually broke open the seal of Daniel and said, okay, now, but I think it was the idea of concealed. Am I wrong? Okay.
The seals
check
on
my fact checker.
The seals on the little book could only be opened by the glorified Christ. But at the end of Revelation where he says, don't seal up this book, he means the whole
the
book.
The prophecy, yeah.
John wrote.
Mm-hmm, right. Because it's not going to be concealed, it's going to be for us to know.
In Genesis, God said to Abraham, shall I keep anything from my servant? And as his servants, he has revealed to us, if we're good observers, what is going on if we depend on him. Yeah. Prophecy people sometimes go AWOL in their speculations of what that might be. But if we are really paying attention to the word and what God is saying, us and our surroundings, he's not really keeping anything from his servants.
No, I think it's the book of Amos, he says, shall I, and does God do anything unless he first reveals it to the prophets?
Or to my friend Abraham.
And, well, to Abraham, yeah, Abraham's friend. That's a good correlation. And what does he say? And I can't remember what psalm it is. It says that the Lord confides in those who fear him. So if you walk a life that is in fear of the Lord, he is going to tell you the secrets of his heart through his word, through his Holy Spirit. We just have to ask him. All right, so that is what the book of Daniel. So Daniel was to be sealed up. It was a long time. It didn't really concern Daniel. Daniel received that message, but it really had nothing to do with him personally at that time, did it? It was not really for him. It was for the future. Now in the book of Revelation, he says, okay, we're in this time now, so don't seal it up. Anybody else?
By him being a prisoner, and I'm imagining that they probably watched him and observed him a lot, and the Lord was revealing this to John. And when you think about Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, all of them, how they use oracles and all these different, it's almost like a metaphoric type Greek mythology. But the people of Israel could understand that. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you think more so than the Roman people, they could identify with it?
That could be. Definitely he used terminology that would be veiled to those who didn't have the ears to hear, the eyes to see. I think throughout Jesus, when he taught in the parables, he taught in a way that if you had ears to hear, you would understand. But if you didn't, what would it be? It'd be like a veil. You wouldn't understand what he was talking about. That's something to think about, Anne.
The same one Paul talks about in
The veil, and the veil removed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got kind of confused about this angel because in chapter 22, he says that I fell down to worship at the feet of the angel, and the angel said, "Do not do that. I'm a fellow servant of yours and your brethren." But if you go back to chapter 1, there's an angel. And then it says that in the latter part, in verse 17, I'm thinking it's Jesus. So
So I'm confused about those two verses.
It is confusing, but I think there is an angel and there is the vision of the Lord here. The vision of the Lord is separate. He sees him, but the angel is the one speaking to him. I think. That's what I think.
It says, I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man, and he placed his right hand on me, saying, do not be afraid, I'm the first and the last. So do you think that's the angel speaking?
No. We were talking about this at lunch one day. How do we trace the who's talking? Because we know we have the angel, because the Lord says he gave it to the from the Father to the Son to the angel.
And it talks about the angel and it talks about his angel.
I know. See, and I think this is something we could really be watching as we go through.
And if you read different commentaries, they call it different things. And if you read different red letter editions of the Bible,
it shows different things.
So different is the words of Jesus. So basically,
it's his words regardless. I know, because there is the angel of the Lord, and we know that the angel of the Lord was a pre-incarnate Christ that we saw in the Old Testament.
Right. Right.
But he's already become a man, and so I don't think that would be the same. Ruth, take on it? No? Okay, we'll just have to watch it as we go. Because I know we were talking about this last night, to keep, if you're marking the pronouns, it's hard to know, well, is it talking about, which one is it talking about? And I'm confused about that too, honestly, I am. So, okay. What's that?
But I don't know which chapter.
In verse 17, okay, he saw the vision, he fell at his feet like a dead man. He placed his right hand on me, saying, do not be afraid, I am the first, the last, the living one. And I was dead, and I am alive. I was dead. And he says, write the things that you have seen, etc. And that, we know that is Christ talking there, right? But then he hears that voice that's like the trumpet. And I think that is the angel's voice telling him and revealing the rest of the story to him.
Okay, in that contrast with the voice of the rushing water, which is for sure.
Yes, Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the sound like a trumpet. And clearly they're two different people. Excuse me, froggy. Because when he's up there looking, he was told to come up by the voice with the trumpet, but he sees the one on the throne, and then he sees the Lamb. So they're separate. Any other questions that we might or not be able to answer? Yeah.
In the first chapter, verse 10, he said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Revelation 4, verse 2, he says, immediately I was in the Spirit. Did we get out of the Spirit? What's the transition there? Why the two references specifically of being in the Spirit?
It could be two different instances, too, that maybe didn't happen consecutively. And I'm not sure about this, but it's possible. And there's been some reference to the fact they did not call Sunday was not the Lord's day back then. If he's talking about the day of the Lord, he's transported to the end times.
In Old Testament time, did the Spirit go in and out of people? And
but this isn't old. This is New Testament. Yeah, I think it has to do with the state of prophecy that he's in. That he's in that special whatever it was where the Lord was able to commune with him.
I agree that it says he was in the Spirit. That was actually the vision, that he was having the vision at that time.
So it could be two different
the presence
visions.
Of the Spirit.
But we're going to look at all this more in detail. I don't think she'll hit every single thing that we talked about, but I know there will be more detail. And if there's something that you're interested in that's not covered in the lesson, research it and then share it with us, please. There's just a lot here to know, a lot to understand. Okay, let's see. This is actually a short lesson, so I think we might have covered everything we need to cover, which will give you more time in your small groups, which is great. Yes?
On page 5, it asks you, to whom is the book written? It's question number 3.
Okay.
Would you say the entire book, or just the first 3 chapters, are for the church?
What would you say?
The whole book.
Okay.
Well, the whole book is for the church to read, but I don't know that after chapter 3, if the church is involved in what happens next.
Not perhaps not involved, but what's the message? The message is what?
Judgment for the balance of the book.
But why?
The things to come.
Okay, so things to come. And what is that to be to the people that read it? What is that message supposed to be?
Hope.
Okay, hope and encouragement. So in that sense, who else would it be given to but to the church? It's the church. It's their message.
It says in 22:16, chapter 22, verse 16, I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you, we sing for the churches.
For the churches. It's just like when we would read in Jeremiah or in Isaiah about the judgment that was coming to Babylon and the judgment coming to Assyria. That message wasn't given to Assyria or to Babylon. Who was it given to? To Israel. And what was it supposed to do for them? To know that God... Okay, to comfort them, to know that God was going to judge their enemies, that they were not going to get away with it forever, that God was going to bring judgment. That was to give them hope, that God's word was true. He wasn't going to forsake them. He wasn't going to judge their enemies. If you curse Israel, then you're going to be cursed. And he was showing that was going to happen. It wasn't that they got that book, just like... And even the book of, was it Obadiah? That's, I don't know which one is for, I can't think which one is for the Assyrian Empire to Nineveh, but they didn't get it. You know, that was given to Israel. So they would know that God was going to judge. So I think that's the same. That this is given to the churches so they can know that God is going to vindicate his holiness and his righteousness. There's going to come a day when God is going to be glorified through judgment. Remember, we saw that in the Old Testament, that God says when he judges, he will be glorified. Now, we think of judgment as being just bad, bad, but God is going to show something about himself when he judges that he cannot show any other way. And he is going to be glorified in that day. So in that day, he alone will be glorified. And that's comforting to us.
So the clarification on that, that question that Lee brought up. Mm-hmm. So the whole book is for the church to read and understand, but that doesn't mean that everything that you read about is to happen to the churches?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, because I don't think
so. I don't think so.
Because I think that question's a little bit sleep. Well, to me, it was...
Yeah, I took it in the same way.
Yeah, I was like, this is what's good. He's talking directly to the church and to their lives right now in chapters 1 through 3.
The letters to the
church. The rest, the churches to know about, just like we know about persecution somewhere else, but they're not particularly involved directly in it.
Because what is God showing us? What story is he showing us? His purposes, right? And we kind of get caught up into I must repent of my sin, and I must be saved, and it's all about me. But really, God has a much bigger purpose for this world, doesn't he? He's showing us that his purpose, we fit into that, but he has a big overarching story and a big overarching purpose, and he's showing that he is going to bring his plan to completion from beginning all the way to the end, and that we should rejoice in that. Just like the elders around the throne and myriads of angels, when they see that this is happening, they're just so excited, and they're rejoicing and they're praising the Lord because he is going to complete what he began. And that is just should be for us an encouragement. Not only does he begin complete what he begins in our own lives, but he will complete what he began in this world from beginning all the way to the end. He is the one in control. You know, when we think about this world, we see all the things that have gone on. I'm sure they saw it when the Babylonians took over and when the Romans took over, and they think, God's not in control anymore. The Babylonians are in control, or the Romans are in control, or the Russians are in control, whoever it is. But God is showing us, not so. Who is in control of this world? He is. And we saw this in the statue of Daniel, remember? When the throne is taken from David and it's given, the scepter is given to the Babylonians first, and then to who? Who is next? Okay, the Medes and the Persians, and then who? The Greeks, and then the Romans, right? And we saw all those empires, and at the time, I'm sure they all looked at those and thought they were just, they're so big, they were in control. But God says, no, there's going to be this stone that's going to come, And he's going to hit the feet, and what's going to happen to all that? It's going to just be obliterated. It's going to be gone because he is the one that set. He's the one that brings the kings up. He's the one that brings them down. He is in control. And we're going to see that at the very end because we've looked at this time in the book of Daniel. We've looked at this very same time that we're going to be studying, and we know who wins at the end. God does, right? It's his plan. He is sovereign over all this world, and he is going to install his king on the throne. And so it's to give us hope. It's to help us to understand, to put our perspective, to put our eyes where they need to be on him and on his purposes, and not to worry when things look like they're going a different way, because God is in control. Ruth.
And the church, as with the nations, sometimes thinks it's higher than what it really is. So chapter 1 through 3 shows an examination by the bridegroom of his church with warning, encouragement, and a look ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And boy, do we need that today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We aren't exempt from his scrutiny, are we? No. See, I saw another hand. Yeah.
I've got done with this lesson. I'm sitting there. I had put the TV on because I wanted to hear what was going to go on down in Florida. You know, they were telling about North Korea and, the bomb, and then there was this one, and then there was that one. And I thought, one day, one kingdom. And you know, Israel must have felt the same way when they were encouraged about it.
Yep. One day, one king, one kingdom. His name will be the only one, and peace will be ever increasing. Peace upon peace. All right, let's stop and we'll take a couple extra minutes in your small groups today and talk about what does chapter 4 and 5 mean to you today? Okay. All right.
And the video starts at 10:45. FYI.